When I was diagnosed with Duchenne muscular dystrophy 20 years ago, there was no hope. The guidance the diagnosing doctor gave my parents was simple. Love your child as much as you can now, because he won't be here very long. That was the inspiration that my mom needed to start Cure Duchenne. Her intention, our whole family's intention, was to cure this disease so no other parents would have to go through the same dramatic prognosis. On June 22nd, we took an important step on that path to a cure when the Food and Drug Administration approved Sarepta Therapeutics gene therapy, SRP-9001, under the accelerated approval pathway. As a community, we celebrate the first approval of a gene therapy that has shown meaningful improvement for some boys. But this is not the final victory, it's only the beginning.
That was Håkan Miller, a content strategist for Cure Duchenne and journalist. He was reading from his recent first opinion essay on the FDA's approval of a new gene therapy for Duchenne muscular dystrophy. I'll bring you our conversation after a quick break.
I'm Jesse McQuarters, branded content editor for STAT. Recognizing the breadth and diversity of America's 53 million family caregivers, how can we better know and see these important unsung heroes? Lisa Wilson, Head of Caregiver Advancement Strategy and Experience at United Healthcare, offers insights.
Family caregivers are a cornerstone of our health system, but it can be challenging to support them in the moments that matter. United Healthcare is breaking down the barriers to identifying and engaging caregivers. For example, we're making it easy for caregivers to establish necessary HIPAA permissions and encouraging self-identification. The more we know about this population, the more we see them, especially early on in their caregiving journey, the better support we can provide.
For more information, visit uhc.com/caregiving.
Welcome to the First Opinion Podcast. I'm Tori Bosch, editor of First Opinion. First Opinion is STAT's platform for interesting, illuminating, and provocative articles about the life sciences writ large, written by biotech insiders, healthcare workers, researchers, and others. Håkan, welcome to the First Opinion Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Tori.
So I want to get started by talking about your personal experience. So you write that you were diagnosed with Duchenne muscular dystrophy as a child. Can you tell us how old you were and what made your parents take you to the doctor?
Yeah, so when I was diagnosed with Duchenne, I was about 5 and a half, and my parents just noticed that I wasn't able to keep up with other kids. So I, like many other kids, was on the AYSO soccer team, and we run laps around the field and such. And I just was not able to keep up. At first, my parents thought, hey, maybe he's just not trying as hard as the other kids. And then they kind of started to see I was walking a bit differently on the playground. I had this kind of scoot to get around. And as I've gotten older and I've seen other guys with younger guys with Duchenne, there's kind of those movements that kind of stand out to you, like, oh, he's using his hands and walking up his legs to get up off the floor, or he's walking on his toes with his, you know, stomach out a little bit. We call that lordosis. And so I think my parents knew from a young age, around 5, that something was off, because comparing to other kids, I really wasn't where I should have been. And so my mom really had to fight with our pediatrician to get a test that would determine if I had Duchenne, because I still was pretty strong overall speaking at that point, and they thought nothing was wrong. They thought I was just healthy and maybe a bit delayed. But my mom really had to fight to get the creatine kinase test, which shows muscle breakdown for individuals with Duchenne. And so we finally got to that point and got the diagnosis around 5 and a half.
And how old are you now?
I'm 26.
So what has Duchenne meant for your life and for your family's life?
I think the biggest thing that Duchenne has changed about where our life is probably going is Cure Duchenne, the organization that my mother founded 20 years ago this year. back in 2003 to try to find a cure for this condition. And I don't think any of us wanted this diagnosis. And I don't imagine any parent or child would want the diagnosis, but we've tried to make the best of it. And I think the amazing thing with this organization is meeting all these other families that are going through the same thing and being able to learn from each other. Hey, this is the scooter that I use that might be best for you. Or here's the doctor that I see that might be best for you to see. And just to talk about the difficult things, the things that we can't do. And I think that was important. My mom is so driven and our family is so driven to try to solve this thing and try to cure this thing that I think we've really driven a lot of the science forward and why we have, you know, approvals like the recent Sarepta 9001 approval. And I think with Duchenne, we've just been able to have such a huge impact that we wouldn't have normally had if I was just a normal kid. And so I'm grateful for that. I feel blessed for that. And I think it's an opportunity to help inspire other younger guys with Duchenne to get through the daily struggles and also know that there's light at the end of the tunnel and that just because we have Duchenne doesn't mean our life is over.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like you've created this really wonderful community of people, of boys and men with Duchenne and their families. But I want to go back to 2003. So, you know, does your mother work or did she work in the health field? You know, was she familiar with Duchenne? You know, how did you all decide to start Cure Duchenne?
Yeah, we definitely weren't familiar with it. Duchenne, we probably heard that for the first time when we were diagnosed. We're like, what is this word? So my mom had previously worked in ads for PC Magazine and had done a lot of work in marketing and advertising. And so she had that background. So, you know, she had the entrepreneurial background, the kind of self-starting background and corporate background, I think helped her start the organization from the ground up. But I think beyond that, it's my mom isn't one to take no for an answer. And I think she's an amazing mother. And I think one of the biggest ways that she shows her love and appreciation for me, I think, is just all the work and effort she puts into Cure Duchenne and trying to make a cure a reality.
So the doctor tells your parents, as you read to us, to spend as much time as you can with your son because he won't be here terribly long. And, mm-hmm. you know, which is just such a terrible thing for a parent to hear and for a child to hear. I don't know how old you were when they shared that part with you. Do you remember how your parents talked to you about Duchenne when you were little?
Yeah. Again, I was diagnosed so young, so some of the memories are hard to piece together. It's based off what I remember, what my parents have told me. But what they share with me is, you know, you're just not as strong as, you know, other kids. Like, your legs aren't as strong. You need to make sure you're taking it easy because you can't be as active as all the other kids. And that you may not be an athlete, but there's always an opportunity for you to be a writer or a musician or something along those lines that doesn't require as much physical exertion. And so they phrase it to me that way. And it wasn't until I was older that I started learning more about Duchenne and interacting more with other kids and other families. I think my parents just wanted me to focus on being a kid and going to school and all of that before really getting me involved too much in it. And I think they were also worried about me seeing some of the older guys that didn't have as good treatment as I did. And seeing that might, you know, I might not understand it as well as, you know, when I was older. So that's how they essentially broke the news to me.
So you mentioned treatment. What kind of treatment did you have access to at the time?
Well, the biggest thing at that time was steroids, which is kind of the standard of care right now. And, you know, there's a lot of side effects with steroids that include stunted growth, stunted puberty, immunosuppressant, things like that, that are typical of steroids. But we felt that it reducing the inflammation in my muscles, which is what it's supposed to do, was far more of a benefit than the risk or side effects of that treatment. And so we started right on steroids when I was about six, and I'm still taking them to this day. So that's 20 years on steroids, which is not typical, but I definitely attribute that to doing as well as I am at 26.
Yeah, and it does sound like you're doing very well right now, right?
Yeah, and I'm blessed and grateful that I am and that I have an opportunity to, you know, with the strength that I currently have to be an advocate and help other people through whatever they're going through. And so that's what I try to do. And there's a lot of reasons that there's a lot of variables that can be attributed to it. I eat really well. I've been on steroids for all this time. I was on growth hormone to counteract some of the effects of steroids and such. So I feel like I've been grateful and blessed to be on the cutting edge of a lot of the care for Duchenne. So I've been able to benefit from them. And also stretching is huge, and we can talk more about that. But I think all those things combined, plus, you know, there's always, you know, a genetic component, as your listeners will know, like that's something that who knows what, you know, what it all boils down to. But I think it's a combination of all those variables.
So, and did you have access to doctors, to treatment nearby? Did you have to travel far for it? Do you have to travel far for it today?
Yeah, I do have to travel far. It's actually, funnily enough, we go to UMass over in Boston from California every year to see my doctor there, Dr. Wong, who has seen me since I was about 10 or 11. And so she's been with me for that whole time and has kind of been able to see how I'm doing, chart my growth and bone density and all those measurements, and kind of interject when she feels necessary for certain treatments. I can say there's some anti-fibrotic heart treatments that I started. It's called eplerenone, a while back, and also some beta blockers as well, just to kind of protect my heart. Even though there wasn't an issue, a lot of the care is preventative. It's trying to predict what that issue might be and trying to get on that as soon as possible before it becomes a problem.
I'd like to change gears a little bit now to talk about the news from a couple of weeks ago, which was, as you wrote, really wonderful news for the community. Can you tell us exactly what happened?
Yeah, so the FDA granted accelerated approval to a therapy from Sarepta Therapeutics, a gene therapy, which is the first such gene therapy for Duchenne muscular dystrophy. Obviously not the first gene therapy ever, but, you know, it's a huge step forward because what the treatment is supposed to do is insert a working copy of the dystrophin gene, which is lacking in patients with Duchenne muscular dystrophy. It's a mini version of the gene that they fit into a virus to deliver to the muscle cells. And so it was approved for 4 to 5 year olds. And so that was a huge step forward. You know, there have already been a few approved treatments for Duchenne that involve exon skipping, which we can talk about later. But this is a new type of therapy that ideally addresses the root cause of the disease, like, for example, SMA with Zolgensma and that approval for that gene therapy. And so it's really exciting. It's a step forward. I think it gets a lot of other biotech companies excited about going into Duchenne and developing drugs for Duchenne. So that just will make them better and better as they move along. And I think the biggest thing is at least patients now have an opportunity to try something at that young age that can really make a difference.
So what kind of magnitude of effect are we seeing in young boys who are treated with this gene therapy? And is there really no better name for it than SRP-9001?
I wish I was in charge of naming. I think that would, I do think that there is a, they have a name for it now, don't they? It's, I can't pronounce it, but
Elevitus.
But yeah, that's what it is. Anyway, so it's definitely varied. Some of the clinical data showed no statistical benefit for older patients. That's particularly why they approved it just for 4 to 5 year olds. However, there's a lot of anecdotal evidence from parents, as we heard at the AdCom, which brings together experts and parents to talk to an advisory committee that gives their opinion on the therapy. And they definitely felt like their boys were doing a lot better. I think I won't try to get into too much detail because there's a lot of back and forth about this, but I can say you know, some parents have felt there's benefit, you know, the data for some of the younger patients showed some benefit, and not as much decline. So I think that's great. And like I said, for a lot of people, I'd rather have them have the opportunity to try something that might help them and may or may not, but is better than nothing that is available right now. So I am excited for this to become available to those 4 to 5 year olds and hopefully change that progression of the disease early on so that they can walk for longer and, you know, run for longer and be able to feed themselves longer and all those quality of life things that are so important. So yeah, overall, it's definitely exciting news, you know, for the community as a whole. And I'm expecting to see a lot more good news coming after this as well.
So you write in the piece that Cure Duchenne, the organization your family started after your diagnosis, played a bit of a role in the early days of Sarepta and Sarepta's work on this. Can you tell us about that?
You know, I don't think I'm the best person to ask with that because I don't want to say something incorrect, but I can say, generally speaking, we help Sarepta as a company early on get past some of the hurdles that many biotech companies face early on.
You know, one thing you write about in your first opinion is that there's something a little bit bittersweet for this moment for you and other men and older boys with Duchenne. Can you talk a little bit about that?
So it's a bit of a bittersweet moment because, like I said earlier, this treatment is only approved for 4 to 5 year olds. So older boys like me can't benefit unless you're in a clinical trial, but those clinical trials can only fit so many people. So ultimately people are excluded from it. So I really wish that it would have been open to more people. I understand why the FDA made their decision. They felt like they could only see benefit in those age groups. So they're playing it pretty conservatively, which I get. But at the same time, I think for the older boys, like kind of we're running up against the clock a little bit with what we're able to do and what we're not able to do. And if we're able to try anything that could possibly help, I think most people would like the opportunity to do that. So I hope that they're able to expand the label and it looks like they will consider it with more data coming in from clinical trials. And so my hope is that they'll expand it so that those guys have a right to try it. And, you know, it may help something very small, like, okay, I can open a water bottle now where I couldn't before, or I can, you know, 5 years from now, still be able to feed myself. So like, it's such those small things that maybe aren't as able to be seen in the data, but are nonetheless extremely important. Like even being able to use, like I said in the article, like a metal fork instead of a plastic fork, or be able to write 2 sentences by yourself versus only one sentence. It's those minute things that can make such a difference, or being able to continue to drive your wheelchair with a joystick rather than needing to use like a head driven wheelchair or using your mouth or something like that. So I think those are all things that make a huge difference that, you know, may or may not be helped by this gene therapy, but at least they had opportunity to try it.
And I mean, it's also notable that this is only available for boys who are 4 or 5, because as you say, you were 5 and a half when you were diagnosed. So it seems like that leaves a lot of children sort of aged out before they ever knew they had a diagnosis.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. Yeah, so even when I was diagnosed, I would have had a chance to try this treatment. So yeah, I hope that the FDA considers opening that up, and I hope that the clinical trials that are continuing going on for Sarepta show some of that benefit.
Have you been involved in any clinical trials during your time with Duchenne?
I have not been involved in any clinical trials. As I said, it can be tough to get into them, and there's a lot of inclusion and exclusion criteria. And I'm a lot older too, which makes it harder because a lot of the trials are for younger patients. But there's definitely some coming up on the horizon that I'm looking forward to potentially having a chance to participate in.
Now, you mentioned earlier that there are certain treatments for Duchenne that aren't a fit for everybody. And so that's one reason why this is promising. Can you talk a little bit about how the existing available treatments leave out some patients?
To answer this question, I'll go a little bit into the genetics of Duchenne. And the dystrophin gene is the gene that encodes for the dystrophin protein, which helps provide structure to muscle cells, and think of them as like shock absorbers for the muscle cells. And so what happens is there's a mutation on that gene, and it could be in a different location and on different exons, which are particular genetic components that go outside of the nucleus of the cell and create that protein. And so there's particular mutations on those specific exons, and also at the beginning and the end, the stop codons for the translation of that protein. And so what happens is some of these treatments that are approved called exon skipping basically trick the body into skipping over those mutated parts. And so it creates, you know, a protein, albeit truncated without that exon, but it skips over the issue and tricks the body into creating it. And so, you know, there's a bunch of different mutations on different exons. So, you know, for example, the mutation for me is on exon 45. So, but others, it's exon 1, 2, you name it. There's multiple different ones. And so some of these exon skipping drugs that have been developed try to address the mutation that most people have, but that still leaves out other people, you know, because they can't necessarily make a treatment for each specific mutation. They just try to go for the biggest ones that they can. And so obviously people are left out, but gene therapy isn't specific to that mutation. It basically replaces the old protein with the truncated version. And so the idea is that it can help anyone. Now, people still can be excluded if they've had exposure to the AAV virus that's used to deliver the gene therapy, and their body already recognizes that as a threat, is going to eliminate that, and there's going to be an immune response. So that makes it difficult. But overall, gene therapy has the opportunity to treat more people than in the past.
Now, is accessibility to treatment, access to clinical trials, are those big issues within this world?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, unfortunately, you know, it is a rare disease, but there are quite a few people affected by it. I believe it's every one in 5,000 births, more or less. So I think just because of the sheer number of patients, a lot of them are going to be excluded from these clinical trials. The good thing is there's a lot of players now getting involved, especially with this approval of saying like, hey, like now I can do this with my therapy. And so more clinical trials are opening up, but I think clinical trial accessibility is a problem in whatever disease you talk about. I think there's a lot of socioeconomic factors at play. Like I may not be able to travel from my job to take my kid to this clinical trial, et cetera. And you know, transportation, and a lot of people travel for it, but not everyone can travel. And, you know, some companies are good about covering the travel and such, but, you know, sometimes they have siblings that need to be taken care of, you know, so there's a lot of different aspects at play. And that's just in the US, and then worldwide, there's a lot of people that don't have any clinical trials at all in their country. So I think, however you look at it, it is an issue, and I think it's getting better with time, and I hope that more people are able to benefit from it.
Yeah, and, you know, when you mention the preventative treatments that you receive, that sort of things, are those generally available regardless of socioeconomic status, or is that something that has been sort of a privilege to be able to access?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, being in the U.S., it's a privilege to access. You know, we used to like ship in the steroids from overseas. Now it's approved in the US, but before that we got it, you know, from Europe. So, and you know, there's a different steroid called prednisone that is kind of the traditional that everyone kind of has access to, but you know, there's some back and forth. Some people prefer it over the other treatment called deflazacor, which I take, and but I found it's worked really well for me. And so I have a lot of other people who have switched over who were taking prednisone before. So, you know, getting access to that, obviously. And then I think the other thing too is just the knowledge of Duchenne and the care guidelines. There's just not a lot of knowledge of it elsewhere in the world. I think for a long time in the US, there was barely anything. Like when my parents first started researching Duchenne, they couldn't find anything. Now it's pretty easy to find a lot of great clinical trials going on, great research out there. So I think it comes down to ultimately, yeah, I feel like I was blessed to be where I was. But there are a lot of people who aren't as blessed and who are in, you know, developing nations that don't necessarily have the knowledge or care or ability to care, or even things like power wheelchairs, et cetera. So yeah, there's definitely a lot of barriers. And I think that you'll see that for most conditions.
So, you know, I think it's about time to wrap up. But before we go, I just wanted to ask what you're looking forward to right now, whether within Duchenne or just something in your life.
That's a good question. Yeah, I think I can start with Duchenne, and that I'm really excited to see all these companies, like I said, getting involved in it. I think we've come such a long way since 2003 when there was basically nothing. So I'm really excited about that and the opportunity for more clinical trials to come down the line, and hopefully eventually be able to participate. I know it's something that I've been wanting to do for a long time. That would be the main thing. And yeah, I just feel grateful to have all these opportunities and the care that I have. And I just hope to continue to use the platform I have to help other people and kind of spread the word about the best care for Duchenne and kind of educate parents and kids around the world about how to best care for Duchenne. And hopefully in the next few years, we won't have to focus on that as much because we'll find a cure.
Håkon Miller, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much, Joy.
Thank you for listening to the First Opinion podcast. It's produced by Teresa Gaffney. Alyssa Ambrose is the senior producer, and Rick Burke is the executive producer. Please let me know what you think about the show, which First Opinion contributors should join us, and whether topics the column and the podcast should take on. You can do that by sending an email to first.opinion@statnews.com. And I know I'm asking you again, please leave a review or rating on whatever platform you use to get your podcasts. Maybe do a batch review and rating of all of your favorite podcasts. Get all of us out of the way at once. Until next time, I'm Tori Bosch, and please don't keep your opinions to yourself.